For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, two of your favorite troglodytes, Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. But I guess I need to apologize right off the bat. You may be offended by being called a troglodyte.
Ooh, that's true.
Yeah.
I am
sensitive, Kent.
Well, yeah. And you know what, Tim? I'm offended that you're sensitive and offended.
Right.
But, you know, if you believe the Geico commercial, you know, we don't want to offend cavemen. So, you know, where have we gotten to the point? When have we gotten to the point where we can't speak, we can't label anything without offending someone? And especially as Catholics, can we live PC, or, you know, is politically correct and Catholic, you know, anathema to each other?
Yeah, there's a lot packed into that. You know, the political correctness, it's interesting because I don't think it has anything to do necessarily with the way somebody would insult me. In other words, the offense is not taken by the person who is being insulted necessarily. The issue with political correctness is to a certain extent trying to show that you aren't sensitive enough. You aren't sensitive enough to victims in general. Mm-hmm. You're not sensitive enough to, you know, somebody else that might take offense. But it really has less to do with me personally. So, you know, if you went and you insulted all German people, you know, the offense isn't necessarily towards me as a German person. But what it is it's an indictment of you as a bigot who dislikes German people.
You know, it used to be, you know, there's the, you know, the Scarlet A. Now it's the Scarlet B. If you want to label somebody and you want to discredit their opinion in any way, shape, or form, you label them bigot.
Yeah, that's really, as you used the word, that really is anathema. Here in the U.S. especially, because of we have a checkered past with bigotry, to be labeled a bigot is really to marginalize someone and really, as you said, Mark, really to insult them and degrade them.
Right. And then there's also, I think, a certain status that goes along with being somebody who is a victim of bigotry. So if I can show that there's other people out there that hate me, that in some ways sort of elevates my status.
Yes. Well, this kind of gets us back to the political correctness, right? Which to me also speaks of that there are certain cultural norms or standards as it pertains to different categories of people that may reflect your something about your identity or group that you belong to. And then there's a clash that occurs with differing views or opinions. And what's really counterproductive about political correctness, one of its features is it shuts down dialogue. Because as soon as you begin to hurl insults like bigot or labels like that are derogatory, then it becomes much more about the person, the bigot, being bigoted than it does about whatever the subject matter had been. And so there's sort of there's almost like an ad hominem kind of element to it.
Yeah, and this is nothing new. It may seem new, you know, bigotry and all of that may seem like a 21st century problem, but the issue of trying to figure out who belongs within society, who doesn't belong within society, who is a member of polite society and who is not a member of polite society, that's an age-old issue. And that goes way, way back. And when you look at the Bible, we as Christians are called uniquely to transcend that and we're called uniquely to honestly be the antidote to that. You know, Paul's epistle goes to a great length to say, you know, in Christ there's neither Greek nor Jew nor slave nor free. And so we as Catholics are really called to be the antidote to any and all of this.
Yeah, there's plenty of biblical evidence that speaks about the equality that comes and recognition that every human person's made in the image and likeness of God, and therefore intrinsically valuable, intrinsically good, laudable, and that is, by being a member of the human family, that is what grounds our dignity.
Yeah, and you know, this dissolving of distinctions and dissolving of differences like that, it's so much more countercultural, I think, than we realize. I think we lose sight of how countercultural this actually is. And in a lot of ways, how upstream we as Catholics have to swim in order to kind of help achieve this view of things.
Well, one of the areas, I mean, you speak about, I think rightly so, that you being Catholic is going to be countercultural, and it also means we're often not going to be politically correct in other people's estimations.
No, honestly, I think part of it is we have to take on the, I guess the status of being somebody that is ostracized, somebody that is on the edges of society, in order to start to dissolve some of that. So, you know, to a certain extent, our job as Catholics is always to be on the fringe, always to be on the outs, and always to be, therefore, to a certain extent, you know, non-politically correct.
Right. Well, one area, it hasn't gotten, it seems like it almost feels like it's fading towards the background, but I'll bring up same-sex marriages, right? That's the law of the land here in the U.S. And other parts of the world. And yet, as Catholics, we can never affirm that two people of the same gender can, in fact, be married.
Right, right. Now, as Catholics, we're supposed to uphold the dignity of the human person, no matter whom the person is.
Right.
And, you know, we always have to acknowledge all of us are sinners. There's not a single one of us.
Some of us are big sinners, Mark.
Exactly, exactly. And so, we always have to start from any of these issues from that standpoint that, you know, at least as far as sin goes and in the eyes of God, we're all equal, no matter, you know, what sins we've committed. But we also have to start from the standpoint that there is sin. And it is our job to try to call each other out of that. In love, in truth, but to call each other out of that. And yes, you're right. When we start to do that, we're gonna quickly get called out as those people that honestly don't belong.
Well, one of the biggest problems, I think, in just having having conversations over issues that are important or that matter to us is that disagreement. Quickly and sometimes almost immediately gets equated with hatred. And so this is one of the great problems of our time, I think, is that if we are seekers of truth, and I would say that we're seekers of truth, well, here in a fallen world, we're not all going to see things eye to eye. And so we're going to, part of the human experience is to experience differences in views and opinions. And that also, we're also going to be subject to what? Mistakes and misunderstandings ourselves. So the only way for us to pursue the truth together is to have free speech and be able to share with one another how we really see things, and then have the intellectual humility to be open to correction and to grow in knowledge and understanding and wisdom.
And that viewpoint requires some assumptions that I don't think most everybody makes. One of them that is that there's just simply truth.
That's the postmodern crisis, right? Is that truth doesn't, no, objective truth doesn't exist.
Exactly. You know, you've got your truth, Tim. I've got my truth, Tim. Or I've got my truth, Mark. I guess I could have my truth as Tim, too.
Right. That's right. That's a whole nother show.
Right. But nonetheless, you know, your truth is your truth. My truth is my truth. You know, I think the phrase that captures this best is, well, you be you, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You do you.
How
you know?
Silly.
Exactly. And the fact of the matter is, as Catholics, you know, part of our faith is that there is one truth, and that singular truth calls all of us towards holiness and perfection. And that holiness and perfection is simply one standard that's set by Christ. And that's universally available to everybody.
Right.
So, you know, that right there sets us up, I think, for, I guess, you know, the little buzzer should be going on, danger, Will Robinson, danger, because that automatically is going to set us up to a certain extent as being countercultural.
Right. Just to affirm that there are, to move even that point a little bit further, one of the areas that I like to bring up when we're having this sort of discussion with others is whether or not universal moral laws exist, because that's a way for us to begin to think about whether or not there is objective truth out there. And so, you know, universal moral laws, universal meaning they apply to everyone, moral laws because they pertain to moral, because they pertain to right and wrong, action, and then laws, which are ordinance of reason that are applicable and govern our actions. And so for the in the Judeo-Christian tradition, the exemplar of universal moral laws really is the Decalogue, or the Ten Commandments, would be something we would hold up and say, well, yes, the Ten Commandments given to us by God, so by the ultimate lawgiver, and they apply to, they're for everyone, they're for everyone's good, and they apply to the rightness and wrongness of certain actions.
Right, and universally so, for everybody. You know, there's no
exception. There's no group that's exempted from it.
No group that's exempted from it, and there's no group that really is held up as somehow capable and able to live up to those commandments better than others simply by nature.
Correct. You know? We all struggle.
We all struggle, you know, and, you know, those are a set of universal laws that I think when you start to peel it back, everybody will have to eventually acknowledge, yeah, I recognize them. But I think more on the surface, people recognize virtue and the universality of virtue and in some ways quicker than they recognize the universality of the Decalogue and the Ten Commandments. You know, everybody can recognize what it is to act courageously and can kind of see when people are acting courageously or when people are acting cowardly. You know, people understand that language a little bit better when you're talking about moral and ethics than necessarily thou shalt not covet. You know, I think also when you get into sort of boy, let's use that awful evil legal term penumbra. When you get into the shadows of the Ten Commandments and all of the things that are implied by the Ten Commandments, I think sometimes it's a lot easier to see it in terms of virtue rather than it is in terms of commandments and law and sort of these universal principles.
We need to take a break, and we'll be back with more looking at the PC world in a Catholic life. We'll be right back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
Foundation, and that foundation is the Word of Jesus Christ.
Catholic Radio Indy.
To help lift my spirit and brighten my mood.
And welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell.
Hello.
And with Kent Blanford. And Kent, you reminded us as we went to break of what we were actually supposed to be talking about. I think we got off topic a little bit.
A little bit.
So we're talking about political correctness and how we as Catholics should react to this move and push for political correctness to enforce political correctness. And, you know, we got off a little bit talking more about universal laws and virtue and morality. And you know, in some ways we got off topic, in some ways we kind of jumped the gun a little bit. So let's talk a little bit, Tim, about this notion of political correctness and how we as Catholics are supposed to react to this notion. You know, one of the first principles I think that we should take from this is upholding and recognizing the inherent human dignity of every human person.
Yes. Yeah. And that's absolutely the case. And so it's from that foundation, the dignity of the human person, that anthropological view is the grounding, I think, for a lot of what we will sort of erect or structures that we'll build on top of that. So recognizing that every human being's made in the image and likeness of God with a special purpose in mind, right? Beatitude, right? That every person that we meet has an immortal soul and is built for eternity. And so we need to affirm that. And that's going to be the basis of things that become important as it pertains to things like, as we develop things like the natural law, but also human rights. Why do human beings have rights? Well, because human beings have, because of their dignity, that we have duties and obligations that flow from the kind of creatures that we are. And therefore, we have rights, which are moral claims to certain goods.
So we should be able to pack it up. We're done. You know, political correctness. It's just you know, that acknowledgement of human dignity. And so, you know, honestly, political correctness means we shouldn't be bigots, and we as Catholics recognize we shouldn't be bigots. So we're done here. We don't really. There's really not much more to discuss.
If only that were that simple.
See, political correctness though implies a lot more than just simply acknowledging the universal human dignity of those people we're talking to. The idea of political correctness kind of implies that to a certain extent, you're always going to have sets of people who just by nature, they can't be politically correct.
Yeah, I think there's any number of tenets of the Catholic faith, which affirmed, especially in the public square, will put us outside the sphere of political correctness.
Right. So let's talk a little bit. When we say political correctness, let's start to define some terms here. What exactly do we mean by political correctness?
I would say political correctness has several prominent features to it. The first of one of which I would say is political correctness entails the cautiously restraining one's verbiage or written communication so as not to offend or give offense to a protected group.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. Is it ever okay to offend somebody else?
I think it is okay to offend other people, and it's unavoidable. And that's different. So I'm not saying that one ought to pursue offending other people on purpose in order to upset them. But I do believe to have a rich, robust, and even nuanced conversation over the most important things in life, we're going to encounter fundamental disagreements. And our fundamental disagreements are based on our core values and who we are often as a person. And it's very difficult for us as human beings to differentiate between my views or my core values and myself as a person. So if someone challenges one of my core values, it's likely for me to interpret that as something offensive against me as a person, because you're touching something deeply held within me. And so, again, if we're going to talk about the most important ideas, the most important principles, it's going to touch on people's core values, and thus people will inevitably take that as sort of rocking their boat.
See, and this is where it gets tricky because, you know, I'm picturing Dr. Kevin Vost sitting in here. We've had Dr. Mm-hmm. Kevin Vost on the show. And, you know, Dr. Vost, very prolific. He's written a lot of books. But one of the books that we've talked about with him on this show is The Porch and the Cross. You know, how Christianity and the philosophy of Stoicism are related to each other, how they've influenced each other. And I think Dr. Vost would point out pretty quickly, you know, offense is not something I have control over. Whether you are going to be offended by what I say, it's something, it's a reaction, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're offended by something, that's you reacting to what somebody else says. And I think that kind of brings up sort of the first reaction that we as Christians ought to have, or the first stance that we as Christians ought to have towards this whole world of political correctness. And that is, we have to be, as Paul would say, slow to anger. You know, we have to be willing not to take offense at what is said, but we also have to realize that other people's offense is somewhat out of our control. And so how we deal with somebody that is offended by what we say, that I think is kind of the next step within political correctness. So if I say something to you, you as a Christian really ought not to take offense at that, no matter what it is. You know, I think it's our job as Christians to diffuse all of that by really taking a stance of, I am going to do my best to never, ever be offended, and to take what somebody says in the most charitable light, and really honestly to kind of acknowledge that and diffuse that and try to find the truth within it and move from the standpoint of truth, not any sense of what this says about me as a person. I can do that as a Christian. I can't demand that of you as somebody I'm talking to. So when we do say something and somebody else takes offense, what is our response to a certain extent? And let's say it's not something that's innately insulting. So you know, I'm not calling you a caveman or a troglodyte or any other sort of
ad hominem. Already did.
Right?
And but, I am sincerely sorry.
Right. but I'm saying, you know, Tim, you're a drunkard. You're not a troglodyte or a bud, but you know, you're doing things wrong. You drink too much. You know, something along those lines. How should we as Christians, I guess, react to somebody else's offense?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, it begins with what are some of our base assumptions are. If my and commitment. So if my first commitment is to be a seeker of truth, recognizing ultimately that truth isn't a set of facts, it's a person, it's Jesus Christ, then I begin to listen and process, accusations about my behavior in light of that. And so I also have to be aware, though, that both in myself and others, that I do have emotions and that I do have feelings and that they're real. But I think going back to, say, an Aristotle or the Stoics, even as you brought up, the key for us as rational beings is that our intellect needs to rule over our passions. So I ought not to. So it's okay to feel my feelings, but I ought not to let my emotions overwhelm my intellect, my ability to reason through things. And that's going to be very important, because it's when our emotions get the better of us, we say, that we wind up doing or saying things that we later on usually regret.
Right. And a lot of times people need help with that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you say something and they take offense at it, you know, a lot of times you can diffuse that by simply stepping back and helping them reason through their emotional responses. You know, you have to be careful, because sometimes you can lead to, you know, even further offense by trying to do that. But, you know, I think there are ways that you can help people to kind of sidestep their emotions, look at things from a more rational perspective, and then kind of move away from, you know, the anger or, you know, instant offense that they've taken at something that's been said.
Yeah, one of the tactics, I guess, that I try to employ, and by tact I just mean it's a process that I try to follow, is that if I'm having a conversation with someone over, say, an article of the faith, and there's disagreement, and emotions are starting to run hot, what I try to do is try to remember a little phrase, which is feelings before facts. And by that I mean it's important to acknowledge another person's feelings, so that way they know that they've been heard, and then from there you can move into, say, the facts or evidence, the reasons behind one's point of view. But if you don't deal with the emotions, then when someone's emotions are starting to run high, then they tend to get the sense that you're not really listening to them, because you're not picking up on the fervor from which that they're stating their point of view. So you can acknowledge their feelings. Acknowledging someone's feeling isn't the same as approving of them or finding agreement with their perspective or point of view, but it's just to say, it could be something as simple as, I can tell that this is really important to you by what you're saying. That's not to say that I'm agreeing with your point of view per se, but it's to say, hey, look, as a fellow human being, I can tell that this is important to you, that this is causing you to react strongly, and I want to acknowledge that. And then once you deal with the feelings, then you can move into the facts or the evidence or continue the conversation.
You're listening to the Catholic Cave here on Catholic Radio Indy, and we're talking a little bit about PC culture and how we as Catholics need to react to the world of political correctness. You know, as we said, you know, to a certain extent, we as Catholics start from the standpoint of human dignity, and so therefore we kind of recognize that any type of blatant bigotry is just wrong. You know, we're all human. Sure. We all have that dignity that comes from being human. But, you know, in our culture now, we try to utilize what we see as the offensiveness and bigotry of somebody else against them. So we try to cast as many people as bigots as we can so that we can shut them down and dismiss what they say because, well, they're bigots. We don't have to listen to them. So there's a certain amount of Jacques Cousset involved in in this whole PC thing that, you know, well, if I can just show that you are in some way prejudiced or in some way bigoted, that I don't have to listen to a word you say.
Yeah, in fact, you're going to. Yeah, it's a way to end the conversation.
Right. And to end the conversation, we're going to break. We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Imagine an encouraging place. Imagine a home for things that inspire. Imagine a storehouse for good news. No need to imagine. Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell, and in the cave is still Mark Tuttle and Kent Blanford. And we're talking about political correctness and one of the things and how it might relate to our Catholic identity. And so I was going to throw this out to you, Mark. So when you hear the term Catholic identity, what sort of comes to mind to you?
Catholic identity. Well, I guess, you know, your morals and your virtues and the way you live your life. So to a certain extent, your lifestyle, you know, that's what defines you as Catholic. But then I guess your adherence to a universal church. So you've got an allegiance to an international universal brotherhood of other Catholics and other, and that extends to other Christians to a certain extent, that sort of transcends other markers of identity. So your identity of a Catholic, as a Catholic, so your Catholic identity almost is a negative identity. If I identify as a Catholic, I'm identifying less as some other group. And so I think that also kind of goes along with being Catholic.
Yeah, so the being through our baptism, becoming a member of the body of Christ sets us apart, right? Sets us apart as God's adopted children. And with that comes a whole host of privileges and obligations and duties and responsibilities on what it means to live an authentically Catholic life. This is why I think in a culture such as America's culture, that we're going to inevitably run into cross purposes and run into obstacles or roadblocks to living an authentically Catholic life, because our ability to shape or influence the culture is hampered. The Catholic Church doesn't wield supremacy over the culture in this country.
No.
And so the culture, this culture, this collection of shared values across the population, all kinds of things. So not the least of which, one that we've talked about frequently because it's so important, it's probably the most important moral issue of our time, is abortion. We have legal abortion in the United States, and that is something simply Catholics cannot support.
Yeah, and you don't have to be Catholic to see how wrong and vicious abortion
right.
is. This is a human rights issue, but that's part of being Catholic too, is standing up for all of those human rights issues as they come up, and no matter what culture. And usually those human rights issues are created to a certain extent by the same things that want to generate a politically correct culture. In other words, political correctness comes about because of this idea of we're going to separate those who belong from those who don't.
Yeah, I wonder too. I'm going to get your thoughts on this, Mark. I wonder too, because I've heard this brought up in other settings that I've listened to, some lectures and things that I've listened to. Now, one might see that political correctness is tied into identity politics. That, in other words, that our political setting is based, according to some, on the group or groups that you identify with. So that would be things like one's gender, one's race, one's age, one's religious or political views, et cetera, et cetera. And that what's happened in this kind of post-modernity setting is a kind of Marxist class struggle, where Marx had used the terminology of the proletariat or working class in conflict with the bourgeoisie. But in today's political correctness, what's been substituted is, instead of the proletariat and the bourgeoisie, what you have instead are these identity politic classes that are then pitted against each other in a conflict for liberation and freedom. So the LGBTQ community is now substituted for the proletariat, and they're struggling to assert, to find freedom and autonomy and claiming rights for themselves, and that's being pitted against the authoritarian bourgeoisie, which is often portrayed as, say, traditional people with traditional values. And what it gave rise to is this the great movement towards the Supreme Court case for legalizing same-sex marriage. Do you see that philosophically as a possible explanation or thesis or hypothesis as to how we find ourselves in these political correctness struggles?
Yeah, I think political correctness does have a lot to do with the sort of, power struggles that go on when you get to this the standpoint of radical autonomy. If you have a notion that each individual is radically isolated from every individual, and the only thing that, you know, therefore we can do is assert our own autonomy against, over and against somebody else, you're eventually going to get to an idea where it's one group of people asserting their radical autonomy and asserting their power, and, you know, it becomes a power struggle of all against all very quickly. You know, as you mentioned that, you know, kind of coming from Marx, you know, it's also very much associated with the philosophy of Nietzsche that, you know, when there is
a will to power,
it's a will to power. When there's just your truth versus my truth versus somebody else's truth, the person who prevails is the one that is
the strong,
is able to wield the hammer the most, right? Mm-hmm. But I also think, though, there's probably a more maybe mundane, innocuous explanation of it. And it's simply an overuse and almost a movement into the area of vice of the virtue of tolerance. You know, we live in a multicultural society, and when you live in a multicultural society, obviously there has to be a certain amount of tolerance of other people that live in and among yourself. But as Aristotle talked about with virtue, you can err on either side. You can either err on the side of too much or too little, and the virtue is right in the middle. And so I think with tolerance, you know, political correctness is pushing us beyond tolerance into a radical tolerance of, you know, we have to not only tolerate each other, but we have to almost ignore each other.
Well, I might even say you have to affirm the evil in your midst.
Yeah, exactly.
To your own peril if you fail to do so.
And the fact of the matter is, as Catholics, there are certain things that we are called to not tolerate, mainly sin. You know, we're supposed to work on our own lives to eradicate sin from our own lives, but we're also supposed to teach. We're also supposed to instruct and correct those around us that are falling. And in an uber-tolerant society where everything is supposed to be tolerated and affirmed, we Catholics quickly find ourselves falling afoul.
Yeah, that's I think it was Robert Riley coined that term, the culture of vice, where we, rather than a culture of virtue or a culture of life, you've got a culture of vice where that radical autonomy being asserted to me in part means this is a wide-ranging desire fulfillment schema of each to their own to your own independence, your own autonomy, that whatever desires you have, there ought to be maximum space within the culture and within society for you to obtain whatever that desire is. And it's not, and as you pointed out, it's not only just tolerating that, whatever, no matter how bizarre or sinful or immoral my desires might be, but I'm going to also demand that you affirm me in my sin.
Right. And, you know, I think it does raise the question for us, you know, why is Catholicism so demanding? You know, why is it that we as Christians are really called out to not only be our own keeper, but to be our brother's keeper as well, and to do what we can, not just to clean up our own lives, not just to live our own lives as good Catholics, but really to call other people to holiness around us? Why is that such an important part of Catholicism, and why can't we just, you know, go along and get along and let other people wallow in their own sin, you know, and we just live our own lives as good Catholics?
Well, I'm going to suggest that it's because of our discipleship of Christ, that we're his followers and we're his brothers and sisters, and we look to the Lord as the supreme example of how we're to live our lives. So we're to imitate him in his words and his deeds and his actions. And so when you look and study the life of Christ, especially in the Gospels, we see the example that we're to follow, and we're to take up our cross and follow him, right? And so that one verse alone is a pretty good summary of what the Christian life is about.
Right. And we do that not because, you know, we are somehow, I don't know, masochistic martyrs that we want to put this huge burden on ourselves. But we do that because we realize that leads to happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, that ultimate human happiness is found in living up to one single standard, and that's the standard of Christ. And so we want to share that with other people. You know, it's not a demanding that other people become like us and other people imitate us and other people imitate Christ so that we can all be identified together and we can all be alike and we can all be homogenous. The calling is a calling to joy and to happiness that we want to call our neighbors to, because we recognize that any other standard, any other identity that we try to find, any other, you know, I guess sort of exemplar that we try to follow is going to fall short. And the only human perfection we can find is that human perfection found in Christ.
Right. And following to you, it's a great point. And following Christ in no way vanquishes our own individuality. And the proof of that is when you look at the communion of saints, you look at how the canonized saints followed Christ and are his closest friends and companions, and you see how wonderfully different and unique they are one to the next. So in a way, it's this universal call of discipleship to imitate Christ that actually brings about the best, most unique qualities in ourselves.
And that becomes very countercultural, because everybody else, I think, has a certain standard that they're trying to live up to. They're trying to be the perfect exemplar of whatever it is they're chasing. And so, you know, that call to move towards Christ and to look away from whatever else is put out there in front of you that you're trying to imitate, to imitating Christ and becoming the image of Christ that we're meant to become, that instantly becomes very countercultural and can even be construed as non-politically correct.
Well, and we're coming up on a break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
It might be the people.
It could be the programming.
But we think it's the God who made the people
and inspired the programming.
He's the best reason we can think of to keep coming back.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and we are talking about political correctness. And we've kind of danced, all around this question, Tim, of how should we as Catholics react? I mean, we've looked at it as, you know, are we politically correct? Do we have a Catholic identity? You know, how is our Catholic identity in Christ, how does that fit with other people finding their identity in different things? How do we avoid offending other people? To what extent is political correctness just kind of a overabundance of tolerance? You know, but we've danced all around the question. Ultimately, is political correctness a good or a bad thing? And we've also kind of danced all around the question of, really, should Catholics embrace political correctness? Should we fight against it? Should we shun it? Should we run the other way? How should we as Catholics really react to this politically correct culture?
That is a great question. I guess if I defining political correctness as a, I would say it's a artificial edifice of kind of sensitivity training around presumably protected categories of people. I would say political correctness is false. It's a false set of notions, and therefore we ought to reject it. That's my take on it. And the way we reject it and push back against it is by having an authentic Catholic identity. And the way we do that, I think, are a few quick ways would be, one is to study our Holy Catholic faith, to know what the Church teaches and why, so it informs our actions and our lives. Secondly, I would say to take full advantage of the sacramental life in the Church. So, along with not just our the precepts of the Church, but also and our obligations, but also the devotions that are and traditions that come with being Catholic. We're on the precipice of Lent, which is such a which goes right into the Easter season and the Paschal mystery. It's such a rich time for us to live out customs and traditions and the sacramental life of the Church that distinguish us as the people of God from those who are not. And so we ought to embrace that. And then I would say, finally, it's an opportunity for repentance and conversion. So taking advantage of forming our consciences and then taking advantage, most especially going into Lenten season, of the sacrament of reconciliation, as well as again, participating fully in things like the Stations of the Cross and other devotions throughout that season. But it's broader than just the Lent and Easter seasons, obviously, but this is a very practical way for us to enter more fully into a rich Catholic identity.
I think that approaching this from a standpoint of, you know, repentance, examination of conscience, you know, trying to take care of our own sinfulness, I think that response is probably the best one that we can take. You know, political correctness, I don't think it's totally foreign to Christianity to a certain extent. In other words, I think this whole move for political correctness has roots in things that are common to the Christian tradition and to a certain extent are Christian. You know, one of them is recognizing that universal human dignity of the human person that we've talked about. And I think we as Catholics need to examine our consciences and kind of go back and say, you know, to what extent have I demeaned somebody else or looked down upon somebody else as less than human in some capacity or tried to set themselves up as something other than the creation and intimate object of God's love and affection that person is. You know, that's something that we should be constantly calling ourselves back to. You know, the other aspect of Christian teaching that I think political correctness sort of dovetails with and follows is this sympathy that we're supposed to have with those who are marginalized and ostracized and who can't speak for themselves. You know, we're called mm-hmm. as Catholics to speak for those who don't have a voice. And, you know, I think we need to be constantly kind of looking through our own lives to say, what are the times where I could have stood up, should have stood up, spoken up for somebody that was being marginalized or marked out mm-hmm. for scapegoating, quite honestly. What are the times that I have not stood by that person in solidarity and stood up for them? Because that ultimately is what Catholicism calls us to. Now, I think political correctness weaponizes that. And I think that's a tendency that we need to sort of watch out for and be on guard for is when this understanding and acceptance and love of somebody else because they are a creature of God turns into a tolerance and an embracing of sin. We have to be on guard for that because as we said, you know, our identity in Christ is one where we recognize that true happiness comes from that holiness that comes from following Christ. And so political correctness is always going to be pushing against that. I also think, you know, we have to watch out for the game of trying to find the bigot. So in standing up for somebody else, you know, we're not trying right. to turn that on somebody else and accuse them of bigotry in a way that's going to mark them out as somebody that needs to be, you know, silenced or ostracized or set to the side of polite society.
Yeah, I think we ought not to be very concerned with being politically correct, but rather the standard we should aspire to and hold ourselves accountable and responsible to is that of charity, that of love. So am I being loving towards other people, most especially the poor, the marginalized, the disenfranchised, those who are most vulnerable in our families, our communities, our society? Am I being loving towards them? And I think if our standard is one of love, especially agape love, then political correctness will take care of itself.
You know, the people who are marginalized, the people who are being, I think, shoved to the side of polite society, they're very often silent. And I think that's the way.
Well, I think of the unborn.
Yeah, the unborn, right? You know, the unborn,
completely silent.
You know, to a certain extent, you know, the homeless, refugees, other
the powerless,
other people. They're powerless and they're also silent by and large. They can't speak mm-hmm. for themselves. So, I think it was Father Dwight Longenecker. He kind of pointed out the way that you can tell somebody who is an authentic victim from somebody that's using victimhood, and using the whole politically correct culture to try to kind of assert power against somebody else, is true victims are silent. These pseudo victims mm. are usually the loudest ones in the
room.
Have
a mouthpiece.
Exactly. They're usually the ones that are trying to kind of assert their own victimhood, to put somebody else down and put other people in their place.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his. I hadn't heard him say that, but that does seem to ring true to me.
Yeah, and I think that's where political correctness kind of goes amok, is when it becomes weaponized, when you're trying to use that marginalized status as something to marginalize somebody else, to mm-hmm. shut somebody else up, to put somebody in their place, and really move somebody into a corner where they're no longer part of polite society.
Right. I think, you know, the best way to push back against political correctness is if you can imagine us, each one of us, and together living out the fullness and richness of the Catholic faith, there wouldn't be much room left in society for political correctness.
Yeah, and you know, I also think the old adage of talk less, do more fits into this quite a bit, because, you know, what we're talking about to a certain extent is how do we love those people that are on the margins of society. And when you speak up on their behalf, when you try to, you know, I don't know, you know, speak to power, or whatever phrase you want to use
speak truth to power.
There you go. Speak truth to power. Exactly.
Yeah.
When you
that's almost always veiling something
exactly.
else.
Exactly. It's almost always veiling somebody else. And it's very easy to fall into the trap of that. But when you simply take it upon yourself to serve other people, and you let your actions do the talking, and you go out of your way to help somebody that's marginalized rather than just speak on their behalf, you diffuse that whole political correct posture, and you diffuse the whole notion of political correctness just simply by becoming a servant of those whom nobody is serving.
Yeah, we're about out of time on the show. Are there other practical things that we should be considering, Mark, in terms of living out a authentically Catholic identity?
I think being very careful to not present your way in a way that is offensive. It's important to show other people's God's love, and part of that sometimes is pointing out and correcting their faults and sins, but we have to do it in a way that's gentle. We have to do it in a way that's loving and is not going to automatically draw out offense. And I think that's it's a skill. It takes a little mm-hmm. bit of practice. And
sure.
just like, and you know, I think that's sort of the other side of that coin, is in order to practice something, you have to do it. And so I think part of it is, you know, a lot of times we're confronted with other people's sin that does need to be point it out, but we have no practice of doing it because we're not used to doing that. We don't make a habit of it. So we don't know how to do it gently, and we don't know how to do it lovingly, and we don't know how to do it charitably because we've never done it. So part of that is actually taking it upon ourselves to try to correct our neighbor in a way that's loving, and maybe mm-hmm. do that for the first time, because a lot of us have fallen into that trap of just simply being tolerant and letting other people live, and you know, we'll go about living our lives, you go about living your life. That's not a loving Christian stance, but there's a way to be able to kind of show people the right way to do things without being offensive about it.
Well, it calls to mind the spiritual works of mercy, and it also calls to mind for me the title of one of Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI's encyclicals, Caritas in Veritate, which is truth and charity. And so that's, I think, what I hear you saying, Mark, and I agree with, which is we need to speak the truth, but we need to speak the truth with charity, meaning that we want to bring about what's truly good for the other person and being willing to do something about it. That's what love is, right? Is willing the good of the other and then being willing to do something about that.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for this week. For Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, may God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.